This is Courage to Resist, bringing you the voices of the troops who refused to fight. In 1999, when he was 17 years old, Tim Richard enlisted in the National Guard in Iowa, hoping to get money for college and happy to be serving his country. In 2005, when his enlistment was nearly up, Richard received notification that his service was being extended and that he would soon be deployed to Iraq. Opposed to the war, he decided to go AWOL and head for Canada. Tim is speaking to us today from his home in London, Ontario. Thanks for talking with us, Tim.
You're welcome.
Let's begin by hearing about your family. I understand that you have a Canadian father and a British mother.
That's correct. My father was born in New Brunswick, up in Canada, and my mom was born in Andover, which is near Stonehenge in England. My dad went to university in Prince Edward Island. My mom was in the Royal Navy, and they had met there. My mom left the Navy, and they moved to California, and that's where I was born.
So you were born in the U.S. and automatically had U.S. citizenship.
That's correct.
Well, let's fast forward a bunch of years now to when you were 17. Tell us how it was that you became involved with the military.
Well, I was recruited when I was in high school. I was 17 years old. I first got a call from a recruiter when I was 16, and I knew my grades weren't good enough to pay for university, and this was about 1998 when I first got called by the military. And then I decided that, you know, it sounded good. They were offering a lot of benefits. And it was the National Guard. I thought, you know, we'd be doing things like disaster relief and that sort of thing. So in 1999, in November, I joined. I signed up for 6 years, and I went to basic advanced training, and that's pretty much how I became involved with them.
You went in 1999. Where were you living at the time?
I was living in Sioux City, Iowa.
So you were in the Iowa National Guard?
That's correct.
And how long were you on active duty with basic training in AIT?
That part took about 7 or 8 months because I signed up for communications, for fixing radios, fixing computer networks, that sort of thing.
And when you were done with active duty, did the National Guard pay for your schooling?
Mostly. They had actually promised a lot more money to me when I joined, but when I was done with basic training and advanced training, they had told me about some law that had changed in the state of Iowa, so the amount of funding they were actually giving me had been cut in about half.
So the amount you actually got was about half of what you had been led to expect.
That's correct.
Was it enough to pay for college?
Well, yeah, I didn't need to take loans for the first 2 years of university. And, you know, what I was still doing the 1 week and a month, 2 weeks in the summer thing, and, you know, I really enjoyed what I was doing. I liked the idea that, you know, I was serving my country and being able to go to school at the exact same time.
You joined in 1999, then you signed up for 6 years. So your enlistment would have gone until 2005. 2 years after you joined, 9/11 happened, and the invasion of Afghanistan and all the talk about war with Iraq. Did all of that start you thinking differently about being in the military?
Well, yes. After 9/11, I, just about any other American, kind of wanted a piece of somebody, you know, especially me being in the military. You know, I had thought that, you know, I want to, you know, do the right thing. I want to, you know, go get whoever did this to America. And then I started doing some research and stuff, and I was, you know, behind the Iraq war when it started because I had thought it was, had to do with 9/11. So, you know, but after the Iraq war dragged on for a bit, and then I realized that there's no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. There's nothing but poor people and a lot of dead bodies. So I started doing some research on the war, and I realized that, well, it was basically a bunch of bull that had been fed to us. So I thought maybe, I mean, I've been thinking about becoming an officer. I've been thinking about, you know, making a career out of the military. But I decided that at the end of my 6 years, I would just, you know, get out of the military. I'd say, you know, 6 years is enough. I'm not going to re-enlist. I don't want anything to do with the Iraq war.
Tell me about the research you did. Did you go to websites? Did you read books?
Yeah, I mean, Wikipedia is an excellent source. I mean, non-academic, of course. But, you know, I started asking questions. I started, you know, talking to people with different perspectives on things. And I just, you know, I learned about the whole, you know, President Reagan, Donald Rumsfeld connection to Iraq, the how Saddam Hussein was installed to counter the Iranian Revolution, which came about because the U.S. installed the puppet Shah in Iran. And, you know, once I started realizing what the root cause of all these things were, basically the U.S., that really got me thinking about what's the point of even being there. I also started thinking in my mind, well, is really military intervention and killing people in this manner right? I mean, it's one thing if you're defending yourself, but, you know, morally, I just really had problems with the idea of going into a foreign sovereign country, invading it, toppling the leadership, taking their resources, and killing people. To me, that was a huge moral dilemma.
So you began to develop serious misgivings, both politically and morally, about what the U.S. was doing in Iraq.
Yes, well, I'd say the moral misgivings were much stronger than the political misgivings. Because, like I said, I mean, I joined the military with the idea of defending the United States, and, you know, I would, if that had been the case, I might feel differently about the Iraq War. But now I just felt like what they're asking me to do was just flat wrong. Shooting somebody who's virtually defenseless is wrong, and that's something that I didn't think that I could be any part of.
All right, so you joined the National Guard, as you said, in 1999, and your time was up in about November of 2005. What happened then?
Well, in about August of 2005, our unit got a warning saying that some members would be deploying to Iraq. They had told us when we had joined that, you know, they don't break up units, they don't send individual soldiers. If you go, you go with your unit. But it turned out, you know, once the Bush administration had got done with us, that was simply not true because they kept basically using us to basically populate other units that were going over to Iraq. And, you know, I was a few months from getting out of the military when I got a warning order saying I will be deployed to Iraq. I asked, what about my contract? And they said I was stop-loss. I found out later, after I had come to Canada and after I had gotten hold of my personnel file, they did not let me see this, but it turns out my contract had been extended from November 23rd, 2005, December
24th, 2031. What? 2031?
I've got the paperwork. You know, everyone says, oh, you signed the contract, you just have to deal with it. That's not in the contract. No one tells you about it when you sign up. So as far as I'm concerned, what they did is illegal, but the Supreme Court of the United States held up that they're allowed to stop-loss you. So, I mean, there's really nothing you can do in that situation.
So what did you do, Tim?
Well, I decided that they weren't going to keep me I knew they weren't going to keep me for that long. I mean, that's silly. I mean, they're not going to keep me for 25 years. I don't think even... that was my thinking at the time. So I decided that I will deploy to Iraq. I decided that I will... they pulled me out of my unit, which was a cavalry unit in which I was fixing radios, and they started training me with an infantry unit along with communications duties. They also started training me in regular infantry duties, such as house-to-house, like house raids, or defending convoys and that sort of thing. And I decided in around November of 2005 that, you know, this is just ridiculous. I cannot do what they're asking me to do. If I were deployed to Iraq, I felt like I'd be a liability because there's no way I could shoot somebody who's simply trying to defend their own home from a foreign invader. They did all this mock training exercises in which, you know, we were in full battle gear and we were raiding mock houses with, you know, actors yelling at us in Arabic and that sort of thing. I had blanks in my rifles and everything. And during the exercise, I shot two unarmed civilians with the blanks in my rifles. And no one said anything to me about it. I don't know if anyone even saw me. But I realized at that time that, you know, if this was Iraq, those people would be dead. All they were doing was trying to defend their home. So I almost just threw away my rifle and ran just there. But, you know, I sort of needed a plan, so I decided that, you know, I'd wait a few days. And on November 23rd, 2005, the date my original contract was set to expire, that's when I went AWOL.
How did you do it? What'd you do?
Well, they were training us in Mississippi. And this is kind of strange because we were under lockdown. Lockdown means that, you know, you can't go anywhere without somebody knowing, not even the bathroom. You had your rifle with you, you had your uniform on at all times, but because November 23rd was Thanksgiving, they decided to cancel training for the day. They let us wear civilian clothes and lock up our rifles. And they decided that they were going to bus us into town to go to Walmart, so we could pick stuff up. And they said, oh, by the way, we'll just drop you off in town, have fun, come back in 9 hours, we'll pick you up. So I figured, you know what, if this isn't a sign, I didn't know what was. So, you know, I got onto the first bus I could, snuck away from the main group. I called a cab. Meanwhile, my mom's on the other end. I didn't tell her exactly what all was going on, but she bought me a plane ticket from New Orleans to Seattle. So the plan was to get to New Orleans, take the plane to Seattle, cross the border in Seattle to Vancouver, then meet my mom, where she was living in Nanaimo, B.C. at the time. And, well, that's the short version. That's what I did.
It's kind of like a plot for a thriller.
Oh, yeah. Hey, if I gave you all the details, man, I don't think you have enough tape for that.
Were you nervous at all?
Oh, I was. My heart was pounding the whole time. I was sweating. You know, I was so paranoid because, you know, it really only takes one phone call, one person to realize what you're up to. And, you know, your name goes in, like, every computer, like, every single military, FBI, local police, everything. You know, it doesn't take that much these days for them to put a looking out for you. So, I mean, I tried to alter the way I walk. As soon as I got to New Orleans, I threw away my dog tags. I threw away my military ID. I tried to, you know, act normal. You know, I tried to do the best I can to sort of blend in. Of course, you know, the haircut and walk sort of just gave it away. So I tried my best to, you know, blend in. And, you know, when I got to the Canadian border, I basically had a one-way car rental. I had a out-of-country driver's license, you know, from the U.S., $400 cash. So I was thinking, okay, I'm busted. My plan was, you know, get out of the car and start screaming I'm a Canadian citizen and let them not kick me out until they figure out that I'm not, which I was a Canadian citizen. So, I mean, they would kick me out. But, you know, the border guard was just really nice and said, all right, have fun, you know, welcome to Canada. And that was pretty much it.
You said you were a Canadian citizen. It's possible to have dual citizenship, Canada and the U.S.?
According to the United States, no, but according to Canada, yes. Because my father's Canadian, when I came to Canada, and I'm glad I did not claim my Canadian citizenship earlier, because if I had claimed my Canadian citizenship as a child, I wouldn't have been able, the U.S. military would have made me forfeit it upon joining the military. Because when I came to Canada, I was able to go ahead and fill out all the paperwork, everything, basically sit on my hands for about 8 months and wait for the citizenship card to come in. And now I'm a full-fledged Canadian citizen, and I've got the rights and privileges of every other Canadian citizen.
We know a few hundred other GIs up there who'd love to have those same rights and privileges.
And that's why I'm up here with the War Resister Support Group. Here in London, Ontario, we've got a local chapter, and we care for, right now there's 4 war resistors here, and we've had 10 others pass through. We do several fundraisers, a lot of political lobbying, a lot of talking to the public, that sort of thing. And I try and be as active as I can with the group in order to, you know, because I feel these guys are up here. I really, in some ways, I feel really guilty because, you know, just because I'm a Canadian citizen, just because my dad was born in New Brunswick, I somehow have a privilege they don't. And I don't think that's right, that I have a privilege that they don't, simply because of where my father was born. I've done the exact same thing they've done. And in fact, I think what they did is a little bit more courageous because I came up here knowing that I had Canadian citizenship. These guys that come up now, they've got no claim to Canadian citizenship. They don't know what's going to happen to them. So that's why I try and work and try and be as outspoken as I can about the War Resister Support Group.
Well, good for you, man. Now, don't underestimate your own bravery. It took a lot of courage for you to do what you did. And now you're in the position to be able to help others because of your citizenship. So you're an important part of the anti-war movement and the resistance movement.
I like to think of myself as a bit of a bridge because, you know, having the war resistor background but also being a Canadian citizen, I feel that I like to think of myself as sort of like a bridge between the two sides, between the Canadian peace movement and also the war resistors. So, I mean, I can understand a bit where both sides are coming from. And, you know, that to me, that's the role I like to have. That's the role I like to see myself in, is being able to, you know, being able to be a sympathetic ear to both parties.
Well, it sounds like you're fulfilling that role very well. Now tell me about your education. Did you finish school in Iowa?
I was 3.5 years into a 4-year degree in music education in Iowa when I got called up. However, when I came to Canada, got my citizenship, I was able to, one of the reasons I wound up in London, Ontario, is because it's an excellent school out here, University of Western Ontario. Just last June, I finished my degree. I changed degrees to music performance and voice, and I was accepted into the master's program here in vocal performance with full funding.
Congratulations, Tim. And thanks so much for talking with us today. You have a great story to tell, and it's wonderful to know that there are folks like you who are willing to stand up to the U.S. military and say no.
And thank you guys very much for what you do, because, you know, it's very hard to get the word south of the border. And I really think that's an important part of this, is getting education and getting the word that we're up here to the United States.
Well, let's all keep working together and make some good stuff happen.
Absolutely.